And let's give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Patty.
Hi, everybody. I'm Patty. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Patty.
And I never know what I'm going to say other than, I'm Patty, I'm an alcoholic, when I come. I really like the reading from More About Alcoholism. My home group, the Keep It Simple group in Colonial Heights, starts out with that reading. And we don't read how it works. But we only read like the first three paragraphs. We stop with it. Should be smashed, and somebody likes to always slam their hand. But I like the next paragraph too that you, this group includes. So I just whispered to Julia, maybe we need to look at adding that to our home group format for script. So I am an alcoholic, and I have a home group. My sobriety date is July 1st, 2011. I have two home groups. One is the Keep It Simple group in Colonial Heights, and we meet on Mondays and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. at Ivy Memorial Methodist Church at the corner of Harrogate Road, and it's now called Route 1, but it's really Jeff Davis Highway, just north of Colonial Heights. The other is another group, and it's in District 29, kind of the Chesterfield area, and it's called Suffered Enough, and it meets at Tomahawk Baptist Church on Hull Street Road, Monday through Saturday at 7:30 a.m. and then on Sundays at 9:30 a.m. at the Disabled American Veterans Building on Newby's Bridge Road. Those two meetings were the basis of my early recovery, and I want to be part of both of them. And I can't be part of too many, right? I get to go to many, many meetings, but those two were core meetings that I got to attend when I first got sober. The morning meeting and the evening meeting really, really helped me in early sobriety. And I continue to get there as often as I can, you know. But life gets lifey sometimes, you know. Even like it kind of like it did when I was drinking, but not like when I was drinking. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor, and I get to sponsor some wonderful women. And I get to be friends with women today. I didn't used to like women very much. It was competition or something. I'm not sure exactly what it was. I identified more with guys. There are six kids in my family, four brothers and one sister, and tomboy at heart. You know, I was into sports, played a lot of sports in elementary, middle, and high school. Didn't go to college. I graduated from high school. But like I said, I was a third child of six, but I was the first girl. I kind of felt like daddy's girl until my sister came along. But and it was a normal Catholic Protestant family, you know. One of the things I like to say that my mother always said was that she was a good Catholic and he was an oversexed Protestant. That's why there were so many of us. But dad was in the military, so early in their marriage, they traveled a lot because dad got stationed in different places. My brothers traveled more than any of the rest of us. I was born outside of Philly, you can tell, can't you? Didn't spend a whole lot of time there. We went to Germany when I was 18 months old, and I had two younger siblings were born in Germany. Mother didn't want to go, but I guess she got over it when she got over there, right? Then we moved back here, and Dad got stationed at Fort Lee. So we've been here since 1960, hence the accent. But they divorced when I was in like the fifth grade, and I remember that day. That's one of the few things. My memory of my childhood is mainly good. You know, I was good in school, I was good in athletics, and I was basically a good kid. And it seemed like any time I tried to do anything, I got caught anyway. But I was, out of the six kids, I was the bedwetter. And Mom and Dad tried everything they could think of to break me of that. They thought it was a habit. They thought it was whatever. I know now that's not true. There was something wrong because I have kids and grandkids that have the same issue. And I had really bad teeth, really mangled teeth. So I felt a little different than even, you know, my own siblings. But when Dad left, I felt like he left me. He didn't leave my five siblings or my mother. He left me with her. I think there was that her the whole time, even though Mom and I were pretty close as years went on. I wanted to go with my father. But I couldn't, you know. And he went on and he had this other life and he just kind of left us. And I was fifth, sixth, or seventh grade. My older brother said I was in seventh grade, but I don't think it really matters. To shop for six kids at the PX and the having to go to Fort Lee to do the shopping because Mother didn't have an ID card anymore. So she would send me in, but it looked like this thick of a list to shop for the month. And I did that. She would wait outside in the station wagon and the carry-out guys would help me bring the stuff out to the car. But anyway, but I still did okay in school. I guess one of the biggest turning points for me, and I drank a little bit. I think I was 16, and I was riding in the car with two softball players. Bonnie and Diane were old enough to drive, so Bonnie was driving her dad's car, and we went to a little hole-in-the-wall dive down on Washington Street and got some 3-2 beer, and we each had two beers, and, you know, I don't remember feeling anything. I don't remember any special effects, and I think I felt more special effects when at Thanksgiving and Christmas, our mother would give us a little cream de menthe or cream de coco, you know, these little fancy glasses that she had. I think I got more out of that than I did the beer that I was drinking with my friends at the time. But like I said, I did really well in school. I ended up not going to college. Mother wanted me to go to college and be a teacher or something, but I decided to get married instead. So the summer between my junior and senior year, I ran off. I eloped with the man I was dating at the time. Not the man I'm with today. Definitely not the man I'm with today. But we did have two children, and for that I'm eternally grateful. You know, there were a lot of not so nice things that happened during that marriage, but we do have two wonderful children out of it, and several grandchildren now, great-grandchildren. So we were married for 5 years, and it was a tumultuous relationship. Like I said, I was only 17, he was 19. I didn't go on to college, but I couldn't do anything I wanted to do. He would look at me and say, when you make as much money as I do, then you can do what you want to do. Well, I got a good paying job, and things kind of went downhill after that with that relationship. I went to work for a company in 1974. In March of 1974, March of 1976, I left him. But he had left my two children at home alone, my 3-year-old and my 9-month-old. But that was me. I knew the relationship was bad. God had to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. He left those kids alone, and I finally left him. You know, it had to be dire circumstances, or I probably would have stayed in that bad relationship for who knows how long. But that was just the beginning of probably not really a downward spiral for me, because I worked at that same job, same company for 42 years. My drinking progressed. I met a wonderful man, and we're still married today. And we worked rotating shifts, and it was always 5 o'clock. You know, you get off of work at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's 5 o'clock, you know, time to drink. You get off of work at midnight, and it's time to have pizza and drink beer or whatever. And I keep mentioning beer, but I haven't mentioned my drink of choice, which is bourbon. And I can't talk about bourbon very long without my mouth watering. And I was sitting in before a meeting one night talking to one of the veterans before that Sunday morning meeting, and Melvin and I are talking, and he's talking about bourbon, and I'm talking about bourbon. I said, Mel, we got to change the subject. He said, why? I said, my mouth started watering. He said, wow, you might be an alcoholic, you know? So even to this day, you know, I'm a couple 24 hours away from that drink, but, you know, that bourbon can still talk to me. That's not what I was drinking when I finally quit, though. Well, I was drinking that too, but that's not what I was, that's not the drink I was hiding. Gosh, there are so many stories Jim and I have been talking about, just different random stuff recently, and I told him, I think it was today, that I don't know if I would have drank as long as I drank the way I drank if things had always, it had gotten bad early, you know? But we had a lot of good time. You know, we used to float the river, drinking beer, and had our bottle of bourbon with us, and had a lot of fun time by fires and camping with the family. And I remember a lot of that. But there are a lot of the memories of family camping trips now that the girls will talk about. And sometimes when one of them will say something, it's like, okay, tell me the rest of the story because I don't quite remember, you know. Because I still drank. I drank till I just don't remember a lot. But we were able to raise my two daughters, which are really our daughters, his two daughters, which are our daughters. One of them is kind of an outlier, but that, you know, that's still a work in progress. And then we have a son together. So we have five children. We worked shift work together for years and years and years. And I shared not too long ago in another meeting that, like y'all, he saw something in me I didn't see. That's why he's still here today. You know, y'all, like, I see in you the same thing I feel in myself. You know, we're alcoholics, but we're good people trying to get well, and that's why we're here. And I believe here that my husband saw that long ago, and I never saw it in myself. So we worked shift work a long time, and we didn't always ride to and from work together because sometimes Jim got put on a special assignment on day work, or I'd have to go into work early because of one of my assignments and that kind of stuff. So Jim and I drank a lot together, but he never drank the way I did. He just found out recently that a lot of times on the way into work on a 4 to 12, when I would have to be there early, I would stop at the food line up the road between our house and where we worked. And I'd get Zima, you know, the big one. I don't know, was it a 48 ounce? I don't even know how, you know, I'm not much on container sizes. But anyway, and I would drink that in the 7 mile trip, you know, and get me started. And I didn't see anything wrong with it. I see all kinds of stuff wrong with it today, but he didn't know about any of that. And the way we rotated shifts, we'd get off of work at midnight on Wednesday night and go back in on Friday night. So we'd have 48 hours off. And on that Friday, Jim didn't drink before we went into work on that midnight shift, the graveyard shift. Patty did. I don't know of many days that I didn't drink unless I was in the hospital having a baby, or maybe when my deviated septum work was done, or I had Bell's palsy. I don't know. I don't know of many days I skipped, unless we had decided to take some time off, because either we had realized that there was a problem, or I had passed out with my 9-month-old grandson and 3-year-old granddaughter at the house when Jim was hunting. And we took a break. That's when it was really starting to escalate for me. My oldest daughter came over and dumped all the whatever was in the house. I know there was bourbon and stuff, but She dumped all of it, probably some of Jim's good liquor down the drain. And we probably didn't drink for a week or two. But then once I started, Patty was back, you know. And it's funny how memory bubbles come up. Every now and then, I'll remember something else that I did. And I can't even think of one of those instances right now, but it's like doing my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor. 5 or 6 years later, I talked to her and I said, I never talked about my stepmother. She wasn't on my fifth step, my fourth step. And she just shrugged and said, well, I guess she wasn't that important. Pause for dramatic effect, right? Leave out some words. And I realized that it wasn't my stepmother. It was my father. And he was on my fourth step. You know, it was a big part of my fourth step. If I had a resentment against anyone, it was probably toward my father. So my drinking progressed, and I'd go to, I'm telling Jim, we'd go to 3 different ABC stores, and because I had progressed from drinking with Jim, or just a little bit before work, to drinking at work. When I went to day work, and Jim retired, because I didn't want to be working shift work and only have one weekend off a month when Jim retired. So I went to day work, and I didn't have anybody looking over my shoulder. I wasn't really running equipment anymore. Yeah, when we're running the motorized equipment, it's not good to be drinking, you know. And anyway, so I started drinking at work. But I started drinking vodka because you can't smell vodka, which is a bunch of baloney, and I know that today. But I would, I bought the below the bottom shelf vodka, and I usually bought the small bottles because they were easier to hide. And I would decant enough to fill up most of my 16-ounce bottle of water to take to work with me. And I did that every day for probably at least 2 years. And our son was away at Virginia Tech. And my mother had just gone in the nursing home. No, she was still in the hospital. She hadn't gone in the nursing home yet. This was September of 2010. And I got home from work one day, and our son's car was in the driveway. So was my older daughter's, and that wasn't unusual. You know, she used to stop by quite often. Anyway, I walked in, and they were sitting upstairs in the living room, and I noticed that one of the kitchen chairs was in the living room, and that was unusual in itself. But anyway, I looked at our son, and I said, Jamie, I'm so glad you're here to see your grandma. And he looked at me and said, Mom, that's not why I'm here. And I knew, and Jennifer said, we know you're drinking at work. And I said, yeah, I am, I need help. Oh, I don't know, I just know I said, I know I am. I don't know if I said I need help. I can't remember that. I did ask for help, called a good friend of ours, called Van, and he told me call EAP, and we did all of that. And I'm jonesing, because my vodka was gone. I hadn't had anything to drink since probably 2 o'clock, you know, and it's just probably 2:30. I don't know. But I was, oh my God, every nerve ending was on fire, kind of like being 4 months sober, right? And so I ended up in Poplar Springs Hospital. I don't remember much about the process. I do know we had to stop on the way and buy a pair of pajamas because I didn't own any at the time. And I remember, I know I would love to see that paperwork because I was shaking so bad. I can't imagine what my signature looked like. And I don't know if I signed all the paperwork or not. I know Jim was there because he drove me there. And I spent 5 days there. And I had a few days off of work. And they encouraged me to go to AA. I don't think I did right away, though. I don't think I walked into Chester Group of Drunks until after I was supposed to return to work, and they called me and said I had to report through medical. I'd been drinking. Well, that didn't go well. So I was out of work for 2 more weeks, and I think that's when I finally went to Chester Group of Drunks and walked in. And one of the guys I went to my first AA meeting in 1991, this is 2010, was there. I only went to one meeting in 1991, September 1991. Julia knows both of those guys. Jim does too. One of them's still sober. One that went out after 24 years, I think. 24 years of sobriety. He's out there drinking now. Just sad. Anyway, I wasn't done yet, y'all. I went to meetings, and I kind of got a sponsor. I had a bad experience with her. She told me to call her, and I did. And I left a voicemail saying, "This is Patty from Suffered Enough. I met you at the AA meeting this morning," or something like that. I don't remember exactly what I said. So I saw her the next morning, and she jumped on me with both feet and said, "How dare you leave a message like that on my voicemail?" Well, I didn't know she had one of those old recorders that you push play and it plays all through your house, right? You don't know who could be in my house. It's like, we happened at your house. My brother might have been. She said, "My brother might have been there." And I'm like, well, all my brothers know I'm a drunk, you know? I did. Anyway. That didn't work out well. And I'm not sure when I asked my friend Julia to be my sponsor, but then I did nothing. I wasn't ready. I started drinking vanilla extract and lemon extract. I think that was the first time I drank mouthwash until I went back to the vodka. I picked up a few airline bottles one day, and then it was back to getting the cheap pint bottles or whatever. This was a, because, you know, I knew I was sick, but I still wasn't ready to ask for help. I still had to have God push me into that ever-loving corner. So I'm not sure when I really started drinking. I went to meetings a lot. And I was going to IOP too, because the company had ordered me to do that. Anyway, I remember going to a friend's funeral that worked at the same place we did, and several other employees were there. And I can't remember if we were still there. And Jim said, "Have you been drinking?" And I said, "No, but I bet it was Mike, because he just had shoulder surgery." And I knew what that was like. I'd had it done, you know. Oh my gosh, the depths. I would, you know, I'm pointing that finger. He doesn't know about that. Jim doesn't understand that I'm pointing the finger at somebody else, but the other three are pointing back at me, right? Anyway, he didn't know about that until I told him later that Mike hadn't been drinking. I had. Anyway, on June 29th, 2011. I was drinking before work. I wasn't drinking at work yet, y'all. You know, 6:30 in the morning, but I got my buzz on. And the job I was working, we could come and go from the plant site. And it was the anniversary for one of my coworkers. He had 40 years at the same company. So they asked me to run over to the food line across the street and get him a cake. So I did. I had 2 little bottles of vodka sitting in my back floorboard of my truck talking to me. So I took a couple slugs on the way across the street, a couple more, I guess, in the parking lot, and a couple more when I came back out with the cake, and then a couple more. I don't know how much, you know. Y'all know what a slug is. I don't sip. Anyway, that was a Thursday. And I hadn't had to report to the medical department to blow in the tube or pee in the cup all week. Now, I'm a smart alcoholic. I pretty much knew it was coming any time, but you know, that was 8:30 in the morning by the time, you know, when I quit drinking. So the medical department called, and I went over there at 1:30, and I blew a .03. And that's not outside the legal limits. And I just love the laughter, the giggling. But you know, at 1:30 in the afternoon, if you've been at work all day, you ought not be blowing anything, especially if you're in a program for alcohol. So they waited the mandatory 15 minutes, and I blew in the tube again, and it was 0.02. And they wouldn't let me drive. So I had to ask for help. This goes back to childhood when my dad left, I think. Deeply rooted in this person, this alcoholic was, I'm never asking a man for help. I can do it on my own. I made enough money. I could raise my kids by myself. Well, it's pretty evident I need more than just my kids and money, right? I need a soulmate. But for months and months, when I couldn't sleep through the night because I was drinking so much, I'd have to get up in the middle of the night and go to the hall bathroom and get that hidden bottle of vodka and take a couple of slugs and go pass out for a little while longer. And then get back up and do the same thing day after day. I couldn't ask Jim for help. That day, I called and he answered the phone. It was like, shit. Oh, excuse me. Darn. He answered the phone, and he drove up there to get me because they wouldn't let me drive home. And they say you shouldn't forget your last drunk. I'll never forget the look on that man's face when he pulled up in that parking lot. The incomprehensible demoralization that we feel, I saw. That I had done it again, that I lied to him again, that I had, you know, the repeat offender, you know. I will never forget the look on his face when he pulled up in the parking lot. So he drove me to the other side of the parking lot, asked me if there was anything in the truck. Of course there was. And I actually gave him all of it. And then I drove home. And I called Poplar Springs and started that over. But something shifted with the look on Jim's face. I still attribute it to that. Just seeing that and God pushing me into that corner that I might lose my job. I could have retired, you know. But seeing the look on Jim's face that I had done it again and again and again. Something tipped in my favor. I believe that today. And I was forced to ask for help. And I don't know that I'd ever really done that before. So I made the trip back to Poplar Springs, another 5-day stay. And it was 4th of July, you know, because it was July 1st, you know. So I got to stay for the 4th of July, but something else shifted. At that time, we Poplar Springs, the civilian population was able to meet once a week in an AA meeting with the military, because they've got a military unit at Poplar Springs also. And a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in District 16 was there carrying a message. And he came up to me and he said he was glad I made it back. The same thing y'all have taught me to say. So glad to see you again, you know. Did you learn anything from it, you know? But he didn't say that. He just said he was glad I made it back, you know, that I lived through it, because so many of us don't. So anyway, I went back home, but I had told the psychiatrist, had the interview with me, and I said I'd rather just continue doing the IOP because my mother was in the nursing home and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so I went on my merry way thinking that everything was hunky-dory, and I got a phone call from the medical department saying, we understand you refused treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you plan to do? And I said, I think I'll go to treatment. Anyway, I got to go to Father Martin's Ashley. It's not called that anymore. It's the Ashley Recovery Center up in Havre de Grace, Maryland. 28 very long nights, not just for me, for our golden retriever and for my husband. But it was the best place for this alcoholic at the time. Even though, I don't know how long I'd been there, but had just been an AA meeting, and I'm walking up the steps, and I remember this just clear as day, even though it was 9 o'clock at night. Oh man, a drink would be so good right now. And after everything that just, you know, and that was the last time I remember thinking that. Truly is. I do not remember thinking, oh man, a drink would be so good. Even when we talk about the fun times, a drink today would not work for this alcoholic. So I got home the, middle of August. It still took me till September to get a sponsor. But I'd heard, I met this little redhead at a meeting in December of 2010, a speaker meeting. It had just started in Johnson Willis Hospital. Anyway, I was sitting there waiting for the speaker, and this little redhead sat down beside me, a little bit older than I am, but she said she recognized me from the Suffered Enough meeting and said, tell me about a little bit about yourself. So I said, you know, blah, 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 you know, work shift work for 35 years and five children and all that. And she said, I'd like to hear your whole story someday. Well, that stuck with me, and I still had her phone number. And I was on my way to my therapist, and she'd been on me, my IOP counselor had been on me about getting a sponsor. So I finally picked up the heavy cell phone and left a message, and she's been my sponsor ever since. And that would have been in September of 2011. And the journey has just begun, even today. You know, there are so many different opportunities. Working the steps with somebody who didn't really know how to work the steps. I was talking to Julie about that on the way down, or while we were eating. I don't know. I can't remember, Julie. But we were talking about book studies. How many book studies had we done with other women and stuff? And I said, well, when I got sober, my sponsor's sponsor didn't take her through the big book, so she didn't really know that much about it. But we used the 12 and 12. And we ended up, we read the stories because I had a hard time understanding. I drank for 40 years, and I drank really hard for most of those 40 years. So I was having a hard time with the first 164 pages. And the doctor's opinion, yeah, that little bitty writing on that, yeah, no, I couldn't understand any of that. I do today. And today my sponsor says she's never sponsored anybody like that again. Since we found Joe and Charlie. Joe and Charlie introduced us to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We were going to, the Suffered Enough group does a Big Book study on Thursdays. So we were reading from it once a week and reading through it and hearing some, but having that intense reading of the Big Book and getting down to brass tacks and writing down and talking to each other about it one-on-one, talking one-on-one with another alcoholic. But, you know, I found out that's how this works for this alcoholic. And by that point in time, the fog had cleared a little bit. I was able to read and comprehend a little more than I was when I was able to when I first came in. So, golly, I don't even know where to go from here with all the opportunities. Family vacations. The amends process, getting to care for my mother who had dementia and being able to be present for her, being told by my sponsor, because I got a little bit of resentment against one of my brothers who was retired, and I was still working when I first got sober. I got to say that because that's an atta girl for me, right? So my older brother was retired. And Jim and I have 10 grandkids and 5 kids, and my brother's got 3 kids and 10 grandkids, and he goes to see mom every 2 weeks, and when I get there, mom says, oh, blah, 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 was here, and all that. And I just get angrier every time I heard my mother say, oh, your brother was here. It's like, my sister and I are coming every day or every other day, what the heck? And when I finally talked to my sponsor about it, she said, "You are not the final judge. If your brother is okay with what he's doing, who are you to say it's not okay?" Oh. And she was right. I was relieved of that ick that I was feeling, that excuse to push me away a little bit, you know. But being able to talk to her and the other men and women in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, well, there's so much freedom in not drinking and being able to tell on myself, like I'm kind of doing tonight. I don't even know what time is it, guys? 8:30. Okay, 8:40. One other story, and this one includes my husband. I hadn't been sober too long, and Jim and I were still living in the other house. We've gotten to move, y'all. Downsized. No more kids moving in. I don't know why I was wrapped around the axle about my husband not being able to put the tongs in the right drawer. This is such a silly story, but I've told it to different people. When one friend of ours complained about her husband fixing chicken the way she didn't want it. She had a plan to fix the chicken a certain way, and I said, "Oh, I got a story for you. He fixed the chicken, you know." "Oh, Patty, he fixed the chicken." So I'm fussing about Jim putting the tongs in the wrong place. We've been married for 25 years. Why doesn't he know where the tongs go? We've really been married longer than that. And first she said, "He put away the dishes." I said, "Well, I didn't think about it in that, you know. Why can't you be grateful that he put away the dishes?" The second thing she said was, "Did you ever tell him whether you put the tongs?" No. So the gift of sponsorship to me is when I have a sponsee going, "He cooked the chicken and I didn't want to cook that way," I'm not wrapped around the axle with her, right? I'm sitting on the outside. I don't have the emotions wrapped up in it. And I've had a good sponsor that could talk me down, you know, away from the cliff a little bit. And the beauty of being able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to another suffering alcoholic, and the opportunities that has afforded me outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, being able to make amends to our kids, you know, because Mom wasn't always present. I was there, but I was in a fog quite often. Talk about the camping trips. There are so many places that I've been that I wasn't really there. Today I get to be there. Today, my oldest daughter's younger daughter, Holly, would have been about 18 when I got sober. Yes. And she had stopped coming to the house, but her mother told me that she stopped Holly from coming to the house because she knew I'd put her in my truck. And she knew I was drinking all the time. She didn't know how much, that it was 24/7. But then I found out that Holly didn't want to come anymore. And she was my partner in crime. She helped me plant flowers. She helped me out in the garden. She was kind of my sidekick if she wasn't my husband's. What an awakening that was. And I just found that out recently. So I got to talk to Holly about that. But I get to do things outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, not just with my family of origin, but I'm also active in the Disabled American Veterans Auxiliary. It brings joy to me and to my husband and to my family because they're getting active in it too, especially the oldest daughter. But, and I just lost it. Whatever my thought was, whatever it was, it went by the wayside. I know that I couldn't do any of it if I wasn't here. I know I couldn't do any of it if I wasn't working with other women in the program. I know I couldn't do any of it if I wasn't being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been active in home groups, I've been active at the district level, both with intergroup, which District 16 doesn't have intergroup anymore. The district is doesn't have the population for it anymore, and at the district level. I haven't been able to participate in the meetings at district level, though, because of my obligation to the auxiliary. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can be present. I get to be a part of life today. Even in my advancing age, because I can't remember words, I can't remember people's names, I'm usually pretty good at directions with Google. CP says, I must not forget I'm an alcoholic. And that is the most important thing for me to remember today. Because if I take that first drink, I can't even think about where I'd be today if I were to take the second, because I know there's going to be a second one. And they're not going to be little ones. Well, they might be. They might start out being the airline bottles like they did before. But today I don't have the desire. I don't, I'd a whole lot rather carry this beat up old loved big book. That was not planned. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a grace. I would have never thought about using that term with me, about me, because I was a clumsy tomboy. But there's a different kind of grace that I feel when I'm in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I still have some of my old ways. Every now and then, a little bit of come out of my mouth that sometimes I regret it, sometimes I don't. Yeah. When I realize I regret it, and it has happened in a home group meeting, I lost my stuff with a home group member and said some very unkind things, and he said some back, and then we made amends to each other like 4 days later. But I knew as soon as it came out, those words came out of my mouth, that, oh man, I gotta make amends to this person. But I did, because y'all taught me how to do that. You taught me that I'm gonna get drunk if I don't take care of whatever it is that's not sitting right in here. And I'm getting better at it because y'all showed me how. And I was wrapped around the axle earlier today. That's one of my fun terms. Want to get really angry with somebody. And I was sharing about that earlier, and it was just somebody that doesn't think do the things the way I would halfway do them. I'm not a very organized person, but when I need help today, y'all taught me how to ask for it, right? So I was pretty wrapped around the axle, and it made me think about acceptance as the answer. So I'd like to close with, how important is it? How important is it really? How important is it compared to my serenity, my emotional sobriety? And when I place more value on my serenity and sobriety than on anything else, I can maintain them at a higher level, at least for the time being. Isn't it funny how I put that in there, at least for the time being? I have to remember that I have to keep doing it. And acceptance is the answer, is the key to my relationship with God today. And then I must keep my magic magnifying mind on my acceptance and off my expectations, for my serenity is directly proportional to my level of acceptance. And y'all taught me that. You know? Everybody's sick. Some are sicker than others. And I'm one of those sick people. And who am I to judge? Who am I to judge my brother? Who am I to judge my husband for putting the tongs in the wrong place? You know? Who am I to judge the person that cut me off this morning? You know? Because I've done it before too. So that's all I have. Thank you.